Hi, Spring fans. Welcome to a beautiful podcast. I'm your host, Spring Developer Advocate Josh Long, and this show is all about the real heroes behind Spring and its ecosystem.
Hi, Spring fans. Welcome to another installment of a beautiful podcast. How are you doing? Hope you're doing quite well. I certainly am. It's Thanksgiving. Well, actually, it's just after 1 a.m. On Thanksgiving Day. But it's going to be a lot of fun. Today's going to be a very special day. I'm going to be having a small together with, of course, vaccinated, in some cases, booster vaccinated people. And I know it doesn't sound like much, but it's a far sight better than the same experience just this time last year. When thanks to the virus, my family and I couldn't even travel to Los Angeles, which is no more than 400 something miles away to see my mom and stepdad and friends. So hopefully that'll change for Christmas. But already, things are much better. We feel comfortable inviting people into our home. So I'm looking forward to that. I'm looking forward to being able to celebrate with friends hopefully, in a month or so for Christmas to be reunited with family. And it's for that reason that I'm also excited to get this episode out the door just a wee bit earlier than usual. I want to focus on being present with my family on the day of Thanksgiving, not to mention I want to entertain and help prepare and all that kind of stuff. So, enjoy. I suspect a lot of you in the States aren't going to be listening to the show today. That's fine. These things are always available in the backlog, and you can go to bootifulpodcast.fm to see what you've missed. For the rest of the world, I hope you're having a great Thursday or Friday, as the case may be, by the time you're listening to this. Of course, I am thankful for all of you, regardless of where you are, you dear, wonderful community. Thank you so much for your just everything. Without you, what else would I have, besides a loving family and my health, relatively. But without you, I don't think I'd be nearly so enthusiastic about my day-to-day sort of efforts. What I do and what the Spring team does, we do because of you. And so I'm sure that in this one instance, I speak for all of the Spring team when I say thank you. Thank you very much, everybody. I am thankful for you. I know we are as well. And I'm also, come to it. I'm also thankful for the Spring team. And speaking of, have you tried the new Spring Native bits on the Spring Initializer? We're at 0.11.0RC1. This version is insane, and I want you to try it out. We're actually doing it. We're doing it. It's crazy, but we're doing it. We're transpiling Java configuration. That is to say, at configuration annotated classes into functional configuration. So some of you may realize that or remember that in Spring Framework 5, which we released in 2017, we debuted a way to programmatically register beans in the Spring application context. So you could call methods and provide bean suppliers, just Java util function supplier instances that in turn returned fully configured objects. And you could actually tell the context, hey, this, when somebody looks for a bean of this type, invoke this supplier. And that's the definition, right? So rather than the container learning about how to instantiate in factory your beans from a bean provider method, it could just invoke these suppliers. Well, why would you do that? Well, it's actually a lot more work than using Java bean provider methods, first of all. Well, at least in the Java configuration DSL. The DSL for Java is limited by the constraints of what Java can support in terms of a DSL. There is a Kotlin DSL. It's a far sight more elegant or concise. And if you're going to do functional configuration, I recommend you check that out. But the point is, with this new release, you don't have to. We'll do it for you. We actually have a transpiler that takes regular at bean annotated controller provider provider methods, and turns the objects that you provide and their dependencies into functional configuration. So if you have one bean that depends on another, you've got a dependency graph and all that, we honor all that, we suss it out, and we turn it into functional configuration for you. This is good for the JVM. It's good for JRE based performance, but it's amazing for GraalVM, because that's just that much less reflection that the Graalvm compiler needs to be A, made aware of, and B, needs to actually execute, right? So when you do this, we can just point Graalvm at that and say, here's your dependency injection code. Well, it's at least this is all the provider code, right? There's still some reflection in Spring, obviously. That's not going to go away completely. But the point is we're reducing the large surface area of things where that matters. And it's great. You get builds, you get compile times for Graalvm that take, you know, a minute and a half as opposed to, you know, several minutes before. On average, it would take like 4 or 5 minutes before, for me at least, anecdotally. And by the way, that in turn is huge, a huge improvement compared to what it was, you know, speaking of the pandemic, right, as the pandemic descended. So if you'd asked me, say, March of 2020, when I did my very first Spring Tips video on Spring Native, if you'd asked me about the times then, I would have said it's like 10 minutes, right? It's a long time. Particularly if you're trying to do something more involved like Hibernate and Tomcat and JPA. That like 10 minutes back in March 2020 to, you know, a minute and a half in November 2021, and we're not even done. We still have a lot of things that we know will improve the numbers. So it's just really good. And then, of course, the startup time is better. The resident memory footprint is much improved. You know, just try it out. You'll be impressed. And of course, as compared to what we had back in March of 2020, we support a huge number of workloads out of the box, right? So, you know, tons of Spring Cloud, most of Spring Boot, Spring Data, you know, Spring Security. I mean, there's just, will there be exceptions? Sure, right? And we're working on closing those gaps, but I can do everything I do in a presentation these days, I can also turn into a native image. Let's put it that way. And, you know, if you've ever seen my presentations, then you know that I do lots of things in my demos. It's, you know, it's just a roving tour of all things Springdom. So the fact that I can turn everything I've written into a Graalvm native image and then, or even better, use the build pack support to then containerize that native image. So I can just say Maven space spring hyphen boot colon build hyphen image. And because I'm using the native profile, the native configuration there, I get a Graalvm native image inside of a Docker image. Wow. You know, that's amazing. It's just so easy. So go ahead and check it out. Unless you're celebrating Thanksgiving, in which case, or if you're just taking the time off, what I'm trying to say is enjoy the new stuff if you've got the availability. But if you don't, like I said, it's fine. It'll keep until whenever the next time you get a chance to take a look at it is. For a lot of us, that'll be Monday, and that's fine. You know. So thank you so much for everything. Hope you have a wonderful, wonderful holiday. If you celebrate, I hope you are healthy, happy, and safe with you and yours and your friends and family and all that. And as always, you know, I hope you get something out of today's episode, which, of course, it's a very exciting one for me. I'm excited to welcome Debashish Ghosh, who's a legend. I've followed him on the Twitters for the better part of a decade, probably more than a decade. He's just one of those people that has been so deeply mired in the functional programming community, and he's got a lot to say about reactive programming and the paradigms there. And he literally wrote the book on writing DSLs. You know, for Manning a decade ago or something like that. And, you know, he's got a new book on functional reactive architecture paradigms. And so he comes at it from the Scala community and from that perspective. But as you'll see when we talk, there's so much common ground, you know, arose by any other name. So when you're building reactive applications using Project Reactor and all that, it's just kind of, it's just insightful to know that when they talk about, when the people in the Scala community talk about, you know, monads and applying, you know, compositions, and isolating effects or side effects and all that kind of stuff, they're talking about some of the same things that we are, right? We want the same things. And it's just really cool that we can find this common ground for building better systems, right? Ultimately, we all agree that there are certain patterns that make software better. And it's not a object-oriented or functional thing. It's just a common sense architecture thing. So check this out. Check out this episode. This is actually one of the most illustrative episodes I've had in a minute, just because it was a great chance to talk with somebody who is at the height of of his game and the game in general, right? And just learn from him. So thank you, Debasish. Obviously, I'm a huge fan. I'm hoping that's been recorded. You know, I'm sure I would have groveled before the podcast, before we started recording, because I just adore him. I cannot, you know, I don't understand half the stuff he says because he's so brilliant, but I adore everything I've learned from him. And I know he works hard and he puts out great content. And so I was just very honored, very, very honored that he took the time to educate me and to talk with me for the show. So truly, I hope you enjoy. I hope you listen. And as always, we'll talk to you next time. We did it. I'm so excited. You're here. You're actually, such a big fan. I was telling you this before we recorded. I'm so, so grateful that you took time to be on my little podcast. Would you please tell the audience who you are and, what you want them to know about you?
Yeah. Thanks, Josh. First, I would like to tell you that I'm a big fan of your talks. I listen to almost all of your talks. Time I find it on the internet. Yeah. Myself, Debasish, I have been working in the industry for so long that I have forgotten when I started working. But most of my recent works have been based on Scala, functional programming, reactive programming, and the likes of it. And I used to work with Lightbend for the last 5 years. I left Lightbend just at the beginning of September, and I'll be joining my next gig in November 8th. And right now I am enjoying a bit of fun employment, doing some stuff on the side and enjoying time with my family. And yeah, and functional programming, reactive programming have been one of the passions of me. I have been doing that for quite some time now. I wrote a few books on that. I wrote one book on domain specific languages, which came out from Manning in 2010. And I wrote another book, which is titled Functional and Reactive Domain Modeling, where I discuss all the details of actually how to build up an enterprise application using the principles of functional and reactive programming. So this came out in 2016, and both the books have been quite successful. And I like to work on functional programming, reactive programming, as I was talking about.
I will get the second one. I'm ashamed to know. I'm ashamed to admit that I didn't know about it, but I will get it. I have the first one. I have the first one.
This is the second one.
Oh wow! Functional reactive domain. See, I should. You got Jonas to do this.
Yeah, Jonas. Yeah, Jonas did the forward for both the books on me. He was kind enough to do it.
He was on the podcast earlier this year, I think. He was on the same show. So, Now I've got two heroes. You know, this year. You know. That's wonderful. That is so cool. I'm sorry I didn't get that book. It's been a pandemic. It's not like I didn't have some free time. I should have gotten it a year ago, and I could have been reading it, and I feel so stupid. I was telling you before the show that I've followed you for like a decade, right? I think probably a decade at least.
Likewise. I've also been following you for a long, long time.
And we've talked intermittently, but I don't, there are some people that I follow, but I'm not, I don't always understand because they are doing more advanced software than I'm capable of. You are certainly one of them. We talked about Paul Snively, the good Paul Snively. When he was on Twitter, sometimes he'd talk about things, that were just, I didn't understand it. You know, it's very deep understanding of software. He used to be an editor of Lambda, the Ultimate. Do you remember that?
Yeah. I used to be a reader of that forum as well. Yeah, that's true.
Right.
Lots of deep theoretical programming stuff. And I used to interact a lot with Paul. Paul's a nice person. And he has also been in the Scala community for quite some time now. And we interact with each other quite frequently. So it's a loss that he's no longer on Twitter, or he could enlighten us all with all his knowledge.
I know.
And I have also been a follower of your work, the stuff that you do, the stuff that you write about, the stuff that you talk about, especially Yeah, actually, whenever people ask me to that they're interested to listen on topics on Java, I point to two persons. The first one is you, and the second one is Venkat. I also like
Dr. Subramaniam.
Venkat Subramaniam. Dr. Venkat Subramaniam. His talks are also quite enlightening, and they're very interesting. So
he's two of you. When people ask me my favorite resources to learn about Java, I have done. You know, hundreds of videos and all that, but I still say, no, go check out Dr. Subramaniam's stuff. And he is another one of those people where I just don't understand how one man can have such an amazing brain.
That's true.
A big heart. I love people.
But you are being too humble. Both of you are amazing. Both of you are amazing speakers, amazing presenters. So I love both of you.
Thank you very much. That's so kind. So I wanted you to just come. I know you don't do Spring these days right now, you know, and that's cool. I just kind of want to understand what the other side looks like. We've had Jonas, and we had we've had several people from other ecosystems, and it's always interesting to kind of learn about the latest and greatest, right? And I think you and I share a common affection for reactive programming, right? And I, you know, obviously Lightbend and the Spring team and Netflix and the Eclipse Foundation and a number of other organizations, we got together, it must be 6 years now, 5 years, and we created the Reactive Streams specification, That's where I first started to learn about these concepts, because before that, Lightbend/TypeSafe, they were the leaders, I think, in making these concepts visible for people,
Right.
And we had Project Reactor, but I didn't know about it as much. Go on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, reactive. The term reactive is a bit overloaded, as I was alluding to you before this talk. So, reactive is all about scalability, as I was talking about. It's not about making your function faster. So that's taking that into account. The basic tenets of reactive programming is being asynchronous or being message driven or something like that, which does not use any blocking APIs.
Right.
So. And also, I'd like to talk about a bit about the difference between reactive programming and reactive systems. Reactive systems is at a much broader scope than reactive programming. Reactive programming is one part of being a reactive system. So, in reactive system, you have fault tolerance, you have the supervisions and things like that, which takes care of the resilience of the entire system. So, today, of course, we are not going to talk much about reactive systems. I would like to focus more about reactive programming. And when we are talking about
So I was just going to say, is Akka a good example in your mind of a reactive system, because it has a supervisor?
Akka with all its ecosystem clustering and things like that is a good example of a reactive system.
I think so too. Yeah, very nice.
Yeah. Yeah, but talking about reactive programming, I think there are quite a few reactive runtimes today on the market, and I must admit that I haven't used Spring Reactive as of now, and
okay.
I have mostly the runtimes that I have mostly used are, one of them is Akka and the other is the Cats Effect, so
yeah.
Both of them I find quite interesting. I find quite efficient, though they are based on slightly different principles. Cats Effect is more of a pure functional framework. It uses algebraic effects in order to handle concurrency, in order to handle asynchrony. So it has a much purer architecture than Akka. On the other end, Akka is much more versatile. Akka can do a lot of stuff which other runtimes cannot do. Akka streams gives you the full reactive streams power, and there are tools associated with the Akka ecosystem. For example, the Sleek database library, the functional database library, it integrates nicely with the reactive streams. So with Sleek, you can fetch a stream which directly acts as a publisher. You can publish it, and as soon as there are subscribers, you can pull records out of it. So this entire ecosystem is very much integrated. And once you have Akka ecosystem as part of your development and design and implementation artifact, it serves almost all the purposes of building a fully reactive system.
Yes, it does. Punctuate that one point.
Yeah, sure.
I did a video, which there's not a lot. There's certainly some, don't get me wrong, but there's not a huge Spring community that loves Scala, right? There's certainly some. Obviously, and it's a nice language, and I don't know why it's not it's not more widely received within the Spring community. But I did a video a few years ago where I used Akka Streams, and like you just said, Akka Streams is great because it's got a reactive pipe. It gives you a reactive runtime.
Exactly.
And at the end of it, you can ask it for a publisher.
Yes.
So you can say, because it doesn't natively think about things in terms of publisher. It has its own pipeline definition.
Right.
But at the end of the pipeline, you can say, please give me a publisher. And then you can use that with Spring Web Flux, with the reactive web stuff in Spring.
Yes,
because it's just a publisher. Yeah. So I did an example where we did Akka Streams, computation over an Akka cluster, get the result back, and then send that back over a reactive web endpoint in Spring. And it was just beautiful, you know. What a lovely
actually you mentioned about Spring people do not use Scala that much.
I agree to that,
but at the same time I think the people who use Spring has been possibly the most it's a framework which has the most profound impact over the last 15, 20 years, I think.
Wow, thank you very much, sir.
People using Spring may not, Spring may not have all the versatility or all the features of Akka, but Spring has what it needs to develop a successful Java enterprise system, Java enterprise architecture. So that I think is the plus point of Spring. On the other hand, Akka has more sophistications. But at the end of the day, we need to question: do we need all of those?
I reject the premise, because what I'm trying to say is, since they both speak reactive streams, you can use Akka with Spring. It's not
So, I'm not talking about the reactive streams part of Akka. I'm talking about all the other stuff around Akka. Akka is amazing. Akka is amazing. Yeah. We have developed huge systems with various clients running Akka clusters and Akka streams and a combination of all of these things. So Akka is huge.
Yes.
And the other thing that I use a lot is the type level libraries like Cats Effect and Monix. So Cats Effect,
I don't know much about this.
The Cats Effect is a much more purer framework. It's based on functional programming. It's based on algebraic effects. And the thing I love about Cats Effect is that is the software modularity which it gives to you. Modularity means we were talking about some of the things before this talk started, that the separation between what to execute and how to execute. So right. I have in Cats Effect, every side effect operates under the influence of an effect, algebraic effect.
What is an effect?
Yeah, the effect is sort of when we talk about Cats Effect IO, when you wrap a side effect with Cats Effect IO, it becomes a value. So I wrap a print line within IO, it becomes a value. IO is a value. You can compose it with other IOs as well. And nothing happens till you execute that IO, till you submit the IO to the runtime system. So
I thought print line didn't return a value by default. So I'm still trying to understand the foundational, I don't understand the basics here. So help me understand. You've got a print line which has a side effect of printing something to the console. Is that the idea?
Yeah.
And you want to defer the execution of that.
Defer the execution till you submit it to the runtime system. So you can have an IO print IO println, then you can have some other IO, and you can compose the two together and get a bigger IO, sort of.
Okay.
And only when you submit this entire effect to the runtime system and execute it, then all the side effects will start taking place. So
you can build up like a pipeline of things that will happen.
And here, the kind of pipeline you can build, that also can vary. For example, you want all of your IOs to be executed sequentially. In that case, there's a different algebra for that. That's called the monad. In monad, the effect is that all the monadic effects will take place sequentially, and it's fast failure. If one of them fails, the entire pipeline fails.
Right.
There is another algebra called applicative, where you can execute all things in parallel, and all of them will be executed irrespective of whether they fail or not. Suppose you have some computations to be done independently. Some of them fetches from some database, the other stuff fetches from some other database, and you want to combine the two at the end of it. You can do these things parallelly. You can execute these effects parallelly, and that's where applicative comes into the play. So this entire thing is based on this algebra. Both monad and applicative, they have their own algebras. And as part of your application development, once you have a monad or once you have an applicative, you can run the laws. Since they are algebraic, they have their laws, and you can run the laws to prove that it's a valid monad or it's a valid algebra. So these kinds of things it may sound a bit theoretical, but with large applications, if you can verify most part of your application algebraically, then you at least can verify the domain laws, the business logic. That's how I've been using them, and there are test frameworks like, say, Scala Check, which allows you to write algebraic properties based on your abstractions, and then they will and you can verify those properties by executing them under the framework. So
that is so cool.
And there are libraries which allows you to do these things under the effects of asynchronous programming as well.
Are you saying that the quality or the property of them being the execution of these different values, it can be in the same thread or it can be on different threads, and that's deferred, that decision is made later after you define the pipeline?
Exactly. The pipeline is the abstraction. The way you execute it can be decided later. That's one other aspect of software modularity that I was talking about. Say I have a cat's effect IO abstraction. I can say run async. The entire abstraction will be run async, and I will give them the callback to execute once the execution completes. Or I can say convert it to a Scala future. Scala future is a running computation. Once it gets converted to a Scala future, it starts executing. Or I can say execute it synchronously. It can do that. So my basic recipe stays the same. I can use the same recipe under different context and get different strategies for execution. I like this separation a lot.
Me too. And so I think we have some of those things. And so I think if people are listening can kind of map what you just said to some of the stuff that we have in Reactor, then they might be able to take advantage of cat's effects in their code.
I'd love to see if you can show me some snippets.
No. Well, I'm not going to show you. Let's see if I understand. So I think the thing about moving one thing to a separate, to async or not async, that's kind of like using a scheduler in Reactor. You can publish on or subscribe on. You can, when you said, you have a fast failure for, you know, if you have a sequence of things that have to be evaluated, that's then many in the Reactor world. So I can say future dot then many, future dot then many. If one fails, the whole pipeline fails. I think that's right. And then the other one is just, if you have like multiple values and you're saying it, they all have to execute independently. I wonder how you would do that. I think you can probably do that. I don't know how you would do that in Reactor. Is that flat map? I don't know.
Flat map is supposed to be sequential, I think. Yeah, flat map is
sequential.
Monadic bind, it's supposed to be sequential. There are various plus points and minus points of the various libraries.
I didn't mean to say that. I'm just saying I'm trying to understand. So cat's effect sounds very useful, and I want to try it. You know, it sounds very clean.
Yeah. Actually, one other thing that cat's effect has developed very recently is cancellation of a process. Now, by definition, threads are cancelable, right? Threads, but you need to write lots of stuff in order to ensure that the cancellation is correct. The resources are handled properly. So resource-safe cancellation is one of the very distinctive features that CATS Effect offers. And you can, and there has been lots of thoughts behind the thing. And using functional combinators, you can define abstractions where your resource is guaranteed to be released when you cancel. And this can happen in chain. For example, you have accumulated a number of resources in course of your execution, and suddenly you press Control C. So the cancellation takes place in stages, and all of your resources will ultimately be released as part of this cancellation process. Yeah, this is an amazing thing.
That's very high level. I don't even know how you would do that. That's amazing.
That's a great one.
Yeah, that's great. So that's called cancelable execution, or what do I Google to learn more about that?
Actually, the thing, as I was mentioning, that everything in CATS Effect is based on algebra. There's an algebra. Right. There's a type class called monad cancel. So you can look up monad cancel, and you will find all the details of how this thing takes place. And the amazing part is that the user interface is very, very simple. Whatever happens underneath is quite complicated. Obviously, it has to be, because ultimately it has to deal with threads and all the schedulers and all these things. But the user interface is what I like. So this thread-safe cancellation with resource backoff, this is one of the great features. You can Google that's for amazing. Monad cancel. Yeah, that's good.
See, this is why I'm so glad you're on the show, because it's this kind of stuff I would never know about, and I feel like I could learn a lot by just, you know, taking a little walk and learning something else for a minute, and that kind of stuff is great.
Yeah, and there are quite a few presentations on CATS Effect which talks in simple terms. For example, the abstraction that it uses in place of threads is called a fiber. A fiber is a very lightweight semantic thread. I think it costs around 140 B or some 140 bytes or something like that. So a fiber is a semantic thread, and everything in CATS Effect is organized around fibers. The fibers interact with threads deep down. It does the mapping, it does the scheduling and things like that. But that's part of implementation. But using fibers, you can also start processes independently. You can cancel, you can multiplex and things like that. So yeah, it's these, I just wanted to say that asynchronous programming is not easy, right? It's not easy. No. if you are given the bare bones of threads and locks. It's the tooling which matters. You mentioned about Reactor. Reactor gives you the higher level abstractions to do reactive programming. So CATS Effect is one other similar tool, I guess. Akka is one other tool. So it's the tooling. It's the higher level abstractions that matter when it comes to reactive programming.
So I couldn't agree more. I think that just to be for the I know you know this and you're just being polite, but I for the listener, Akka is a fair bit more than just Reactor. Reactor is just like Akka streams, whereas Akka, it's kind of like Erlang's OTP. It's a whole, it can do a lot more than just data flow, right?
That's true.
But I couldn't agree more. I was just thinking about in the Java ecosystem, you saw Reactor, right? Reactor enables us to write asynchronous pipelines or synchronous, but the point is you define it in a static way, or you know, you define the template and then at some point you can execute that. There is a concept, when you write this code, you don't worry about the threads. You don't worry on what thread it's going to execute.
Right.
And because it's all asynchronous, if it needs to be, the scheduler can move things around. And so if there's any blocking interaction, that goes away because you have to write it in this asynchronous way. But as a result, the runtime, the scheduler behind the scenes can see that you're asking for something that hasn't come back yet. And so it can wait. It can move that to the background and then move other things onto the thread and do that work, right? And so this is what you were talking about earlier, where you get much better concurrency, much better scalability.
Yes.
That's wonderful. The other thing is in the Kotlin world, which is another language on the on the ecosystem, there's this concept of coroutines, right? Which coroutines, is a bit, yeah. I think, like your fiber. Cat's effects.
Right.
I wonder though, I don't know. But the nice thing about the Kotlin integration with Reactor is that we can make it so that if you return a mono of T, where mono is like a completable future, but it's a reactive type, if you return a mono, you can write your code using coroutines such that the function can be said to just return T, right? But it executes on a separate thread behind the scenes. Async await, right?
Async await, yeah, right.
And that's lovely. So now you get the best of, you get some very good parts of both worlds. You get the reactive runtime and the elegant syntax that something like Scala and Kotlin can provide. Right.
Exactly.
So that's cool. I would love to see, I'm going to go try this cat's effects and see if I can get the concept of fibers to work. That seems really very promising.
Definitely.
What were you, so you just left Lightbend / some people might know it from the name TypeSafe. What were you working on there, if you don't mind?
Sure. Actually, I was in the later part of my stay, I was part of the Akka core team, and I was working on Akka enhancements. And parallelly, I was also working on a team called Cloudflow. We were developing a distributed application development platform, which works with streaming platforms like Spark, Flink, Akka Streams. So it's basically streaming application development and deployment. It deploys to the Kubernetes also, because it has an SDK which has some basic abstractions called Streamlet. As part of the Streamlet, the user is supposed to define the business logic. They can do it either in Scala or in Java, and then you can pipeline together the streamlets in the form of a blueprint, which defines your entire pipeline. And this entire blueprint thing is declarative. You can have the streamlets, you can pipe them together using a blueprint. And the blueprint also, in the blueprint, you can add stuff like Kafka topics and things like that. And when you have the blueprint, it has Cloudflow used to have a CLI. You can deploy the entire blueprint as in the form of a Kubernetes application. There are a bunch of SBT plugins and CLIs which did the work, but you don't have to write YAMLs by hand. Everything got generated. So all you need to write was Java code or Scala code. And it actually works with Spark, it works with Flink, it works with Akka Streams. So as part of the same pipeline, you can have various streamlets, some streamlet working with Spark, some streamlets working with Akka Streams, and you can pipe them together as part of your pipeline and deploy it in Kubernetes as a single application.
I love it. And you said the magic words there, which is no YAML required. Obviously here at the big old VMware ranch, we have a very nice Kubernetes distribution, but I do my level-headed best every day. I do my best to avoid writing YAML if I can, you know, or at least just to write it once and never worry about it again, because it's my continuous delivery pipeline, you know. Yeah. That's wonderful. So that sounds like some cool stuff. So yeah, and it sounds like it's right up your alley, you know, so to speak, because it's all about the safe management of data at scale.
Yeah, that's true. And Cloudflow is being used by quite a few clients right now. So it has been quite successful. Yeah.
That's wonderful. I guess you're gonna be coy and you won't tell us where you're going next. Is that fair?
Yeah, I'm joining a small startup. It's known as LeadIQ. And LeadIQ, and what they do is they actually develop data analytics tools for the sales team for making prospecting smarter using machine learning and stuff like that. Streaming a combination of data streams, data analytics, and machine learning. So I'm going to join them, and one of the reasons, of course, is that it's totally a Scala shop, and they use functional Scala and things that I love to work with. So I'll be joining there November 8th, and you are possibly one of the first persons to know this, because I haven't yet disclosed this name on Twitter or any of the social media platforms. So
should I like embargo this episode then?
Yeah, you can do that. You don't have to embargo. You can keep it. You can keep it because it's no longer I don't want to keep it as a secret because there's nothing secret about it.
Okay. Oh, well, very lucky them, LeadIQ. That's this is a company to watch. If they have people like you, that's they must be doing a lot of things right. That's wonderful. You're on Twitter. Where do people go to find you on Twitter? What's your Twitter coordinates? Do you have a place on the internet you want people to find you?
Yeah, Twitter is possibly the best place to find me because mostly I write stuff on Twitter. My Twitter handle is Debashish G, DebaSishG. So that's my Twitter coordinate. Besides that, I'm also on Facebook, but that's mostly for families and friends and stuff like that. I don't discuss anything technical there. And LinkedIn is not one of the places where I live a lot. But when I was doing some job searching, I happened to be on LinkedIn quite frequently, and that helped me. And I used to write a blog, but it's no longer in use. I don't write it these days. So possibly this Twitter thing. Yeah, that's possibly this Twitter thing has this effect that whenever I feel like writing something, I write it in the form of a gist and then post it on Twitter. So,
isn't that? I think that's such a bummer. I love your brain and I love the things that come out of it. It's a shame that you have.
I know. I should be writing. I should be writing blog posts. Possibly. I need to revive my blogging habits.
Yeah. Well, and it's not obviously you have been affected by Twitter. We all have. It's made the discourse so much more coarse.
Exactly.
But that's okay. So people can go get your books though. That's a good way to get a big dose of knowledge. That one that was reactive systems. What was it again?
Yeah, it's known as functional and reactive domain modeling. Yeah, this is the
book. Okay. And then the first one was this is functional and reactive domain modeling. Very nice.
Yeah,
cover.
The first one is pretty old.
DSL
in 2010. It's DSL in action.
I remember DSL. That. I have that one. I know that cover. Yeah, okay. I know that book. Manning, that one is so. Yeah, that Manning, one's a good like. That probably holds up pretty well today because it's DSLs, you know.
Yeah, actually, the basic concepts still hold good. Basic concepts are still good. They use some older versions of the language, but the concepts are still very much valid.
Wow! So cool. Thank you for taking the time to educate me. Yeah. I'm gonna go try out CatsFX, and I'm gonna go play with. You know, I feel like I have an itch to go play with Akka some more as well.
Definitely. So
it's very satisfying. Thank you for taking the time. I don't know what time it is where you are.
It has been my pleasure. Yeah, it's 12:30 p.m. 12:30 in the afternoon.
Oh, okay, good. So it's not like a.
It must be late night for you, right? 10 o'clock or something, or 10:30.
Oh no, midnight. It's just about to be midnight.
Yeah. Oh, just midnight. Okay.
And the reason we have to cut this interview short is because I have another meeting starting in like 20 seconds or whatever. So,
I'll not hold you back. It was very nice talking to you. And
likewise,
I'll
obviously.
keep on watching your talks. I love watching your talks. So,
I'm so sorry.
The dynamism that you bring in your talks is really infectious. It's really great. Yeah.
We are all, you mentioned the good Dr. Subramaniam, and I think he is the archetype, you know, like we're all apostles in his stead, so to speak.
You know? Right.
Thank you, sir. Have a wonderful day.
Yeah. Have a wonderful evening. Bye.
A Beautiful Podcast is produced by me, Josh Long. I do these podcasts because I believe that everything we do in software is for and made better by people. I want to hear from you. I'm Josh at joshlong.com by email or at starbuxman on Twitter, where, of course, my direct messages are wide open. Do you have guest ideas, topic suggestions, feedback? Don't hesitate to reach out. If you like the show, then please consider rating it on iTunes and leaving a review, as it really helps the show. I sampled music from Steve Combs' Them from Morning in Springtime and Steve Combs' Small Victory, both of which are licensed under a Creative Commons license.
I'm trying to hire production assistants to make the production of this podcast easier. I want to make sure that we can add things like show notes and transcripts and just generally do more. If you would like to advertise on the show, then please reach out to me. And if you can't or don't want to advertise but would like to otherwise support the show, then please consider supporting me at patreon.com, patreon.com/Josh Long for as low as $4 a month. Thanks again. No harm came to any seasons in the making of this podcast.